And let me introduce our next presenter, Dr. Lee Werner, who actually will have his presentation provided by David Johnson. Dr. Werner, I'll read his bio, is currently Associate Director for Science in the Division of Reproductive Health at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. He received his undergraduate degree in Business Administration from the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, and his doctorate degree in epidemiology from the Rollins School of Public Health at Emory University. Dr. Werner joined CDC in 1996 with the Division of HIV/AIDS Prevention and previously worked with the Office of Perinatal Epidemiology at the Georgia Division of Public Health and the Department of Gynecology and Obstetrics at Emory University. During his 20-year career, Dr. Werner has published numerous research articles and book chapters in various areas related to reproductive health, including the use and effectiveness of condoms, vasectomy, adolescent pregnancy, HIV counseling, and testing. He is a nationally recognized expert in the evaluation of barrier methods of effectiveness and was a member of the FDA's advisory panel for obstetrics and gynecologic devices. Let me also introduce the gentleman who is going to be presenting on behalf of Dr. Werner, and he'll be presenting his own comments, and this is David Johnson. David Johnson is a public health advisor at the Office of Family Planning and the Office of Population Affairs at the Department of Health and Human Services. Mr. Johnson's primary focus is positively involving males in family planning and reproductive health. He is performance management and budget lead within OPA, a performance management liaison to other OASH agencies, and manages several Title X family planning national grant programs, male research initiatives, and the OPA national training system. So with that, David, would you come on up and do your thing?
Well, thank you very much. For anyone who knows Lee Werner, you won't confuse the two of us. It's actually my pleasure to be up here, and it should be fun. And before I forget a couple of things, because it's slightly odd giving someone else's presentation, but actually I'm very happy that Lee actually trusted me to do it. So I'm going to do my best to represent Lee and the CDC on what they're doing, the progress that they're doing, and hopefully be able to mesh together how Scott led us off kind of at this higher level and taking a look at the ACA and then actually figuring out what's actually going on in the department. And so hopefully I will not forget to tell you what all these acronyms mean eventually. So I do apologize for writing that in the bio. So the other thing is, if I forget to mention it either during Lee's presentation or mine, please bring up, pre-employment physicals as far as strategies in order to help provide services to males, as well as environmental occupational exposures. Lee probably planted you in there because they're in his presentation about that and the importance of and the effects of mortality and morbidity on males compared to others. So, on behalf of Lee, Dr. Werner, who is unfortunately not able to be here through nice government red tape, as you all well know that it happens. Certainly likes to send his thanks to the Men's Health Caucus of APHA for this opportunity on behalf of CDC. I'll be highlighting for him some of the scientific and programmatic activities at CDC regarding men's health, specifically with a focus on reproductive health. The tipping point, how little things can make a big difference. This term was coined by Malcolm Gladwell in his book, Considering the Same. One of the most influential books, I think, when we take a look at it, what it really means for men's health, specifically regarding changes and how they occur so quickly sometimes. We always think about changing, we dread changes, and then all of a sudden it's there. So many of you are actually familiar with Everett Rogers and the diffusion innovations, and this book actually takes a look at that and really builds upon that in that theory. It's very telling regarding male reproductive and sexual health in that within the field, we're at a point where sufficient momentum has been building and actually the time for meaningful change has occurred. So it's kind of our poster as far as where we are and where we need to be continuing the momentum. So what does this all mean? What's been happening throughout the year? So over the past decade, and actually even longer than that, there's been increasing interest in men's reproductive health from the U.S. government and several agencies. So starting in 1994, the ICPD, the International Conference on Population Development in Cairo, this is the first time reproductive health was really defined, and it included males in there. And they built upon the WHO definition of health and how we always talk about it's not just the elimination of disease, but it's also mental, social well-being, employment as well. Building on this conference was actually another conference in 2003. It was USAID-sponsored, the United States Agency for International Development, that really actually focused on male involvement in reproductive health. I actually was incredibly familiar with this because this was actually a conference that I worked on right out of grad school, so it was very dear to me to see this up here, knowing that it had the impact that it had and it still has. It really focused on gender equity, social and ethnic constructs, and how they define male/female roles in the home, society, and individually. So it was held in D.C. However, unfortunately, very few department, HHS, as well as also domestic policy and program individuals are actually in attendance this meeting. So in 90, when we look at the early 2000s in international, we typically look back and figure out what's been going on international. International work doesn't always trump what we're doing domestically. In this case, they've been doing so much work with gender and male health, especially male reproductive health, that we're trying to follow it in its wake. Subsequent consultations held by NIH since 2006, and annual actually by our office, the Office of Population Affairs, has been some of the other things that we've been doing to make sure that male reproductive health continues to have a voice and a presence within the field of population and reproductive health. So talking about CDC a little bit, shifting gears and give you a brief overview of CDC for those that may not be familiar. It's the primary federal agency responsible for public health activities. It was founded in Atlanta in 1946 and was known as the Public Health Service Malaria Program. The agency focus has broadened over time to include other communicable diseases, STDs, hepatitis, HIV, TB, etc. And more importantly, to include both non-communicable diseases and prevention. As always, we, as a Fed, there's a few things that you are required to put in your presentation as one in an org chart, either as ugly or as pretty as it is, but that's something that they make us do. And so it's one to confuse everyone. So when you take a look at CDC, it's a huge, huge agency. And it's unfortunately a little small, but the white boxes are the ones that we'll kind of focus on. But like I said, we try to make the easiest things possible difficult. So that's what Lee has accomplished in this slide. There are really three main offices. The Office for Infectious Diseases, then there's also a newer non-communicable diseases, which reflect CDC's expanding mission, and then also the surveillance and laboratory services. And this is where the MMWR comes out of, software program, the EpiInfo, as well as the NSFG and other large national surveys. The Division of Reproductive Health is actually located in the Chronic Disease Center. When we look at not only CDC, but in the government as a whole, there's really no formal inventory of male reproductive health programs or any singular coordinated program at CDC dedicated to reproductive health, men's reproductive health. So what we end up doing is actually kind of trying to build together, slowly but surely, different agencies with like-minded missions. So the Division of Reproductive Health, where Dr. Warner is based, the appropriation from Congress is actually for safe motherhood. Like many things, it comes in different forms, but as long as it's being put where it needs to be, the shalls versus the mays and the shoulds, etc. So this focus on women's maternal and child health, DRH's work is really, the part that is related to men generally falls under male involvement in family planning as contraceptives or as partners. And those, and how it's used in examining the use and effectiveness of condoms and other birth control, as well as vasectomy. But it's also related to infertility, preconception care for men to help facilitate healthy pregnancies, as well as reduce STD, HIV incidence, and further prevention. So infertility. This is of great importance to CDC, many parts of CDC, not just the Division of Reproductive Health. And so there's a significant stake in STD prevention as well as environmental health related to infertility. The DRH, the Division of Reproductive Health, has taken the lead for the assisted reproductive technology surveillance and actually has published its annual reports on the effectiveness for the past 15 years. It started a series of linkage projects with state and birth and death registries to figure out what really, what are the effects of these assisted reproductive technologies, often referred to as ART. So the division has also begun work to look at how non-ART treatments contribute to single and multiple births, as well as it's become a partner in the development of a white paper on framing infertility as a public health problem, and as a follow-up in trying to develop this into a national public health action plan. So this is part of the things that are in the works at CDC. To give a quick update on the Infertility Action Plan, which serves as a blueprint for possible public health activities for government and non-government organizations, the CDC has coordinated development of this plan, which was made available for public comment just recently in the Federal Register. And so right now, although the comment period is closed, they're actually working on consolidating, responding to those comments, and hopefully we'll post it for public comment in the upcoming, probably around the spring of 2013. We hope. So what are some of the new CDC initiatives? One is teen pregnancy prevention, kind of an initiative that is very strong throughout the government. At the same time, has a big bullseye on it. No one really wants to talk about teen pregnancy. At the same time, nobody wants teen pregnancy. So how do you reconcile that? Well, we'll try to figure out different ways of doing that. So the new teen pregnancy prevention initiative in reproductive health at CDC really actually involves young men, which is a great way of doing it. I mean, you'd think someone has to be involved in teen pregnancy other than the female teen. So this initiative is part of the President's Teen Pregnancy Prevention Initiative. While teen births have declined remarkably over the past two decades, more than 300,000 new teen births occur, and within that, there's significant racial and ethnic differences among those births. This initiative is actually conducted with the Office of Adolescent Health, which is within the same agency as the Office of Population Affairs, and actually next door to us. And the aim is really to decrease the number of these births by implementing evidence-based interventions, which are either proven to reduce pregnancy risk, especially in communities at high risk, or that are promising practices. So a couple years ago, there was I think it was $125 million or $150 million, and it was referred to as Part A and Part B, I think, or Part 1 and Part 2. And so Part 1 was the evidence base that was on a list, and Part 2 were the promising practices. So in consultation and in collaboration with CDC, we're getting some very good data around that and some very good evaluation as well. So most recently, CDC actually funded 5 national organizations and 9 state-based and Title X programs to implement some of this targeted work. It's a very interesting photo. I think things might be slightly different if the men in the room look like the gentleman on the right. We may have some different priorities of our health structure. So in the area of the Division of Reproductive Health expects to become more involved at CDC is really the area of preconception and interconception care, with the goal of fostering healthy pregnancy outcomes. A lot of attention has been placed on preconception and interconception care for women. CDC has actually issued guidance for women going back to 2006. And recently there's been an increased recognition of the importance of such care for men. CDC is currently working with the Office of Population Affairs on revising family planning guidance, or our family planning guidelines, which were last updated in 2001, or are in review. And part of this is to both update them for men, but also update them for women. And so one of the ways that we are looking to involve men a little bit better, because the research base is not as good as we want it to be, and I'll address some of that with how it respond to the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force and some of the decisions they make and why those decisions may be made the way that they are. But preconception and interconception care is really an avenue for to address men's health in a positive way that will appease some of those that may not want to actually focus on men's health, especially men's reproductive and sexual health. So in September of 2010, there was really a great day for CDC in the Division of Reproductive Health, as the CDC, with actually a lot of help from the Men's Health Network, co-hosted the first ever meeting on male reproductive health. The meeting examined topics including male contraception, fertility preservation, mental health, and other related lifestyle issues. And really, like I said, with the help of the Men's Health Networks, the Male Reproductive Health Alliance, and some other public and private partners, it was really a great meeting addressing a lot of the medical issues as well as the public health issues. Often, especially speaking from a Fed, we often work in silos, both purposely. At the same time, we don't communicate with those that we really need to communicate, and those are often the frontline providers. So nearly 90 attendees with a variety of disciplines, in especially with the interest in men's health, were in attendance. We came together in Atlanta to talk about the status of men's health and also possible future directions. So many were, you know, there were many topics of interest that came down, but we actually really spoke a lot about actually reproduction and what reproduction means in the eyes of males. So what else is out there that the Division of Reproductive Health as well as CDC does to help the field and the nation keep up to date on data so that we can better inform programs? So here are a number of publicly available databases related to men's health that are maintained by CDC. The first five are run by the National Center for Health Statistics and actually out of the D.C. office, while the last two have been hosted in the National Center for Chronic Disease Prevention. Beyond vital statistics, most notable surveys is really the NSFG, the National Survey of Family Growth, which is a national representative study of contraceptive and reproductive health behaviors by women of reproductive age. It's about 40-plus years old and often was conducted between every 5 and 7 years. But with the changes in technology, which is great, it's actually now ongoing, and I believe it was in 2002 was the first time that they included males in the survey. So the past, I think, about 4 years, this has been a flurry of data, flurry of reports and other, I guess, literature that's been published using these data, and it's really good stuff. Teens and minorities actually in this are actually oversampled, so that's an interesting thing that occurs. And it's really a great resource maintained by CDC. And so for all those that are also interested in adolescents, there's also the Youth Risk Behavior Survey, which is a national representative survey of high school youth conducted annually for the last 25 years. And it covers topics including alcohol use, tobacco, sexual history. And so the links below will also get that to you, to those surveys. So we also have different effects of occupational exposure. So one of the areas through the National Institute for Occupational Safe and Health, CDC conducts research including occupational studies and the effects of various chemical and physical exposures on reproductive health of both men and women. And, you know, not only just chemicals, but we also think about what are the occupational exposures through actions and behaviors. And so one of the noted studies examined actually sexual function of workers in public safety occupations who rode bicycles for the job. And demonstrated that no nose saddle, so the relatively looking uncomfortable part of the saddle, the nose, if you decrease that or actually get rid of it, it decreases pressure to the groin and increases sexual function. And of course, this finding has implications for men, not only those who ride bikes as part of their job, but really recreational. So are there any cyclists in the room? So you kind of know that numbing feeling when you hop off the saddle for about 2 hours, and it's like, wow, am I ever going to feel anything down there again? Sorry, that's a personal note. Even with a padded seat. NCEH examines the impact of environmental exposures of chemicals and really works to improve clinical laboratory tests used in treatment of diseases related to reproductive health. And so the measures a whole range of different chemicals, 300 to 400 different chemicals, including diethylstilbestrol. I probably slaughtered that. It was a long time since I actually was in chemistry. Which is a non-steroid estrogen and acts to suppress testosterone, which has been linked to other reproductive health effects, especially male offspring. So these are some of the areas that that we're looking forward and that CDC is actually looking to investigate a little bit more. Let's see. So finally, CDC really has a focus on primary and secondary prevention of HIV and AIDS, particularly among men who have sex with men, as well as other STDs, the latter which it may be linked directly with infertility. So many of you also be aware of, may be aware of the CDC is responsible for the national guidelines for STD treatment, which the latest version was published in, or released, excuse me, in 2010. And so this is the web page at the very bottom where you can access a little bit more information if you have it regarding CDC and men's health. So how can we really maximize opportunities? The first thing that I think Dr. Warner really wanted to highlight, and we saw at the men's reproductive health meeting at CDC 2 years ago, is to identify areas of overlapping interest with other disciplines and with other individuals and groups with vested interest in men's health, especially in absence of financial and other administrative resources. So this is the first his first attempt to really take a look at this list of overlapping areas. And, you know, for all of you to take a look at and consider which resonates, which may not resonate as much. And since the title of the larger presentation is really the ACA, Dr. Warner wanted to share a couple points regarding ACA and what are really the effects of effects on male health. So without it being specifically identified in the law, and there's a couple things that sound very general, but there's they have I think a larger outcome and really something that we need to consider. And one is including youth, young adults, especially up to the age 26 on parents' insurance plans, it really offered an opportunity to provide services that weren't provided prior. So most insurance is kept, as long as the child was in college, it kept them really about to 22. And this extra 4 years is significant. And so some of these services can include reproductive health services, especially to young men. And then also thinking about this, more than 3 million young adults really have gained coverage since this went into effect. I guess it was probably about a year ago when this provision went in. The second thing that Dr. Warner wanted to talk about was in states that expand their Medicaid program, more men theoretically will have access to health services, including reproductive health. And so it's something that we're trying to figure out, even though Medicaid expansion was not was struck down by the Supreme Court, there's still several states out there that have incredibly low FPL, federal poverty limit levels. Excuse me. I believe Alabama is one that comes to mind. It's either 14 or 17%. That's the cap of what they cover for Medicaid. So there's a lot of talks about there or discussion about how we can increase men's reproductive health, and also Medicaid expansion. So these are some of the things that have occurred. One, ASRM just occurred last week that Scott was in. The AUA, this is for next year, the American Urological Association, has an annual meeting. This, I guess San Diego happens to be the place. And then the Office of Population Affairs just had our National Reproductive Health Conference, which really this year was the first time that we hit on a clinical. We involved a significant amount of clinical direction related to men's health. So it wasn't just programmatically based, but we tried to have physicians and other clinicians come in to gain experience treating and addressing clinical issues. So this is our final slide, and actually Lee has his information here. So I hope I did him justice. It's a shame because Lee's very dynamic, and he has an incredible passion for this. And so, it was a pleasure to be able to do this for him. But at the same time, I offer you to give him as many questions as possible for this, because he's the right person to ask for many of these areas that you have.